Blog Talk Radio.
Show coming to you live from Bowie, Maryland. A lot of bad habits. I let the song play again tonight because it seems American banking still has a lot of bad habits. And that's what we're here to talk about tonight. JP Morgan, biggest of the American banks, the bank that President Obama says does it right. Jamie Dimon, the genius, the best banker in America, $23 million a year. Well, his bank lost $4 billion of banker's money. And you know what? Since it's not just an investment bank anymore, that those deposits are all insured. Yeah, insured. So if J.P. Morgan can't make good on that money, you know what happens? The federal taxpayers pay for it. That's what happens. And somebody like Bain Capital's cruising out there, sees this crippled bank, and they pounce. And they sell it out from under them. Well, maybe that won't happen. But what are we supposed to do about this? Commercial banks, investment banks, they're all part of the same banking process now. They were separated at the Depression to make sure the Depression would never happen again. 1998, they're allowed to come back together. 2008, what happens 10 years later? Catastrophe. A massive step in by the federal government is the only thing that keeps the entire financial system from collapsing. That's capitalism, folks. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are your ideas? What should happen to Jamie Dimon? I think he should, at the very least, go to jail. Well, you know, it's so big, even the federal regulators, they didn't know what's going on. You know what? It's his job to know what's going on. Why do they mess around in these things? It's unbelievable. They need to raise the discount rate. They need to raise the amount of capital that the banks have to have on hand. They can't lend. It's actually a percentage of the money they lend. And though, I guess the other question, you know, I mean, what do we do about these banks? What do we do about them? Oh, I am so disappointed by all of this. You know, and what do we talk about in America, whether gay guys and gay women can marry each other? The fact of the matter is, that's not a pimple on a donkey's ass, as my father used to say. We've got to do something about it. I'm 347-945-6713. That's the call-in number. Do we leave everything the same? Do we elect Romney and the Republicans? Does Obama and his cabinet have a clue to what's going on? I'm starting to believe that they don't. Yeah, you can sit there and pretend that you're the deliberative genius. I'm sorry. It's not working. It's not working, Barack. What are we going to do about it? We got to do something. Something has to happen. The rich just get richer. The poor get poorer. You know, I went to the Chinese restaurant today, and I don't know. I was reading the early writings of Karl Marx. So how many of you ever read those? The early writings are really pretty interesting. The problem with them is that many of them weren't even published until the 1930s. Hey, guest 8406, why don't you give us a call, 347-945-6713. You know, Jamie Dimon goes before his stockholders today, you know, and they give him a vote of confidence. He's a piece of coal. He's no gem. You know, if everybody's so smart, how come things keep going so badly? All these smart guys, whenever they talk about the guys in Washington, oh, well, yeah, well, he's a really smart guy, you know. They got really smart people in charge over here and over there. Well, if they're so damn smart, why do things keep going down the tube? They're not any smarter than the steelworkers in that ad for Obama. The guys who lost their job. And the wider and the bigger that income gap gets, the less and less chance that other people will ever be in a position to make those decisions. I'm not making it up. The guys who make those decisions, they're not smart. They're greedy bastards. As Dylan Ranigan has to say. I don't know if anybody's read Dylan Ranigan's book, Greedy Bastards, but it's an apt title and it's a fun book. You know, when things like this happen, it makes you wonder, my God, is Ron Paul right? Is the gold standard the answer? You know, I wonder how many congressmen know how the Federal Reserve works. It's just unbelievable. Banks don't have to have anything backing up what they do. And so they just do anything they want. They make bets on bets on bets. Eventually, the whole thing just collapses. I really would like someone out there to call in and explain what happened at J.P. Morgan. And then we can go from there. The number's 347-945-6713. We're 10 minutes into the show. This is what we're going to talk about tonight. We got to do something. There are two basic kinds of banks. Investment banks and commercial banks. They're supposed to be separate. They're supposed to have different functions. But they're not anymore. And when those functions come together, all right, what happened at J.P. Morgan? Well, now I'll tell you one thing. The amount of money they've lost, it started out at $2 billion. Then it was thought it might reach $4 billion. And it looks now like it will approach $5 billion. The really interesting thing, if you ask people what happened at J.P. Morgan, nobody knows except they lost billions of dollars. How can you allow that to happen? The trade's not even over yet. It could get worse. Now, the good news is right now that J.P. Morgan is so big that it's probably going to be able to survive this without a bailout. I mean, it's really hard to believe that some bank could lose $5 million or $5 billion. That's nine zeros, not six. J.P. Morgan, they're supposed to be the best this is all risk management. They're supposed to be the best manager of risk on Wall Street. J.P. Diamond, the smartest banker of them all. What happens to his company? $5 billion. Oh, man. Well, the last time, you know, everybody bet the housing market wouldn't go down. That's what everybody was betting on. Well, they all lost. We're in the middle of a depression. Millions of people don't have jobs. It's spread across the globe. I don't know. J.P. Morgan bet on something, and it went south. Nobody's quite sure what that is yet. Oh, the Volcker Rule. Now, according to the Volcker Rule, commercial banks, banks that make loans, banks that use federal insurance to back those loans, J.P. Morgan does, aren't supposed to be able to make bets on their speculative bets on their own behalf. Well, they do. Let me go back to I'm sorry, I've just got a little, still got no callers, that's good. If you got something you want to say, 8406, just say it. It's unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Everything we do, it seems, in this financial system, it's just a fake. It's just illusionary. It's just a big house of cards. I don't know. I just don't know. Somebody give me a call, 347-945-6713. Oh, man. I'm looking at some more questions and answers. What happened at J.P. Morgan? Oh, this is a beauty. Jamie Dixon revealed an unexpected $2 billion loss in the bank's synthetic credit portfolio. What could be more synthetic than credit? It's manufactured money. They have an office whose job it is to manage and offset credit exposure. Now, these types of trading may be allowed under the Volcker Rule. Nobody's ever heard of this office until... hedge funds. It's like when you hedge a bet. You know, you bet. You bet $1,000 on something, and it's usually a big high-risk position. And then you go bet, you hedge that bet by making a safe bet in another position, so that if you do take the loss, it's not so big. But if the thing comes through, then you make a big killing. Oh, man. You know, it's like you bet $2 on a 100-to-1 shot in a horse race, and then you hedge that bet with $2 on the favorite, so that if you lose your $2 on the long shot and the favorite wins, then you get some of your $2 back and you take away the risk of voting on the 100-to-1 shot. The 100-to-1 shot cashes. It doesn't matter that you lose $2 on the safe bet because of all the money you make on the big one. The problem is, and this is when you lose a ton, when you lose both bets. According to the Volcker Rule, you can't bet against yourself. And when you bet the $2 back on the favorite, that's essentially what you're doing. You know, I don't know. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my gosh. I don't know why. You know, I'm just waiting for somebody to call me. We got to talk about all. Or if you want to call and talk about gay marriage, you can do that, too. The floor is open to gay marriage conversations. The floor is open to women's issues. The floor is open to general... but the big deal is, what are we going to do about this capitalist banking system? It's just, what are we going to do about the growing income gap? gap that's starting to exist. I don't have answers. What are we going to do about a school system that doesn't work? All of these things, they're all major issues that should be front and center in this election. And what do we talk about for a week and a half now? All we talk about is whether two men should be able to get married or two women should be able to get married. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if men and women get married. It's a reality that isn't important. I mean, the rules for how people do it, people should just do it. I don't know. Sometimes, you know, people, they call up and call me an idiot. You know, I guess I am the Rush Limbaugh on the left. I've been told that. I tweet up a storm. You know, maybe the way we should get a hope, well, get a whole bunch of people together, throw in your money, and start a business that way. Or start a business small. Now in this digital era, you shouldn't have to borrow a lot of money. I mean, look at Facebook. Their IPO is going to come out pretty soon. Not sometime next week, I think. I'm not sure of the date. If anybody's got the date, give us a call, 347-945-6713. Zuckerberg didn't start with any money. Oh, and how about his partner? Yeah, the guy, the hero of the movie, the guy that got zapped, Eduardo, renounces his U.S. citizenship so he doesn't have to pay any taxes on the money. Bite me, Eduardo. Oh, unbelievable. I'm still waiting for somebody to call up. Republican, Democrat, independent, I don't care. Somebody call me and tell me what I was supposed to do about all this stuff. Is there anything we can do? How about we call a constitutional convention, abolish the Constitution, and start over? How about we do that? You know, you listen to Chris Matthews on Hardball. Everybody's smart. Everybody's a top reporter. Everybody's this. Everybody's that. Things just keep getting worse. Everybody yaps about privacy. You know, it makes me think of Gregory House. The basic problem is everyone lies. And so if there's no privacy, I guess it's liar, liar. You see that movie? Well, if there's no privacy, it's liar, liar for everyone. Come on, I can't go for another half hour all by myself. 347-945-6713 is the... I'm going to go see what's happening in the tweetverse. Let's see if anybody's back-channeling us. Oh, God, I haven't signed in on this computer. It's very hot and humid today in Washington. Very hot and humid. I am definitely going to the Zubar on Thursday night for Big Boy Little. I can't not. I can't go another week without the blues. I don't know what in the world is going on around here, but it sure is hot. It is so hot. Well, I'm going to wait for a call to come in. Meanwhile, no, nothing's changed in my status. I guess I just sometimes, you know, I think I'm just a crazy, crazy person. And it gets to be just wrong, I guess. I don't know. It's just so hot. Well, one good thing that the girls' soccer team made the tournament. I'm really glad to hear that. Good for them. So that's a real, well, that's at the school I used to teach at. That's a real cool thing. I'm really happy to hear that. They haven't made it the last couple of years, and let me go back to my Twitter account. I don't know what's going on here. Hey, I got a call coming in. I'm sorry, I was off somewhere else. You're on with Norm at Night.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well, a whole lot better than J.P. Morgan.
Oh, yeah. Well, for them, you know, it's embarrassing, but, you know, it's not really that big of a deal for them.
Oh, $5 billion.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, well, they've already lost $2 billion. They may lose more, but $2 billion to them is 75 cents a share. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it does matter.
Well, you know, it matters that they, you know, made some very reckless bets, and you can't call them anything but bets, you know.
No, I understand. That's what happens when you combine commercial banking with investment banking.
Yeah, they, well, they apparently they still have large holdings of mortgage-backed securities, and these are European securities. And what they did was buy derivatives similar to credit default swaps on these investments, and they were betting, or more or less trying to hedge. They thought that everything was, that whole market would go down, and it didn't happen. So, these things expire or they lose value, whichever, and they were caught. They were stuck holding them, and they're not worth anything anymore. So, anyway, of course, it's an area.
Yeah, but what I don't understand, how do they lose money?
Well, these things are, it's similar to buying insurance, okay? And you're protecting yourself against an event. And if the event doesn't occur, this type of insurance has to be renewed. It will expire in 1 year, 6 months, or however long you do it. So the money's gone. And this was a massive purchase. I mean, enormous. You know, for that market.
What would have had to happen for them to win?
Oh, well, here's the deal. Basically, you'd probably need, a real crisis in the housing market. Similar to us a few years ago, where you have a lot of defaults and bankruptcies and what have you. But we're not dealing with, like, individual mortgages. We're dealing with these giant monster things, it's a combination of, say, 500,000 mortgages in one package. That's what they own. So you want to protect yourself against a decline in that market, okay? The problem with these swaps and all of that is that they're barely regulated at all, anyway, even in this country, which was the problem the first time. I mean, the CFTC is clueless. I mean, they're supposed to be, writing regulations in accordance with Dodd-Frank, and they're having a hell of a time doing it,
Mm-hmm.
Because they trade in areas where there's no one to monitor. There's just nothing there. And I don't know if it's still true, but there was a point in time where anybody could sell them. And I mean,
okay.
Anybody.
Okay. So J.P. Morgan sent $2 billion somewhere.
Right.
For what?
To insure their investments, to hedge their investments.
Okay, the way I understand the hedge, it's if I go to a horse race, I bet $2 on the 100-to-1 shot. I hedge that bet by betting $2 on the favorite at the same time.
That's about right, yeah. Well, see, there's some question as to whether it was actually a hedge. So
if it's not a hedge, it's illegal.
Right, exactly. So this is, that's why the SEC is a rare case of where the
SEC. Other way, if it is a hedge, it's illegal.
Well, this is the thing. Unless somebody looks over their books, no one's going to know if it is or it isn't.
There's supposed to be federal regulators embedded in the place.
Well, there are in the Federal Reserve Board. And review those banks continually, or they're supposed to.
It's like 40 or 50 regulators embedded in the company that are supposed to be watching that they're not doing this.
Well, this operation wasn't in the United States. They wouldn't be there.
But it still has to show up on the books.
Well, I can tell you about books. you had Lehman Brothers with $50 billion of debt off the books, and it sat there for years.
I guess people just don't understand how banks work.
Yeah, well, even, I you know, I know what I know, but I'm certainly no expert on it. I pick up a little bit here and there, you know.
I can tell you the basics. People think that I want to start a business. I go down to the bank and borrow $100,000. Then they give me $100,000 and I walk out of there with it. But they give me a check for $100,000. That's not what they do at all. They give me a line of credit.
Mm-hmm.
They give me a checking account, essentially. That I can write checks on.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree to give them that money back over X amount of time. Now, the federal government says to them, when they're when they're completely unregulated, they don't have to have any deposits to do that.
Mm.
They just do it. But the federal government, it's called the discount rate. It's how much, what percentage of the debt on your books you have to have in real assets.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing with the FOMC now. I believe most of the banks are required to keep about 8% in reserve.
Yes, not very much.
Yeah, I know it isn't. You know, because you'll notice Canadian banks all did just fine. Well, they all had like 20 to 21%.
I don't know.
No, I know by but I know because those banks weathered the storm without much of a problem at all. But here's the situation now with all of the major banks. They have enormous reserves. J.P. Morgan itself has over $350 billion in reserves that they're not loaning out to anyone. I mean, they can keep it in, you know, treasuries or something of that sort, and they can collect the money on it, and they can borrow all the money they want at next to 0%, you know. But part of what they're doing now is to get these banks shored up, you know. A lot of the remnants of the crises are still around, let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's going to take a long time to work everything out of the system. Now, there's one thing you should know about European banks. They didn't do all this. In fact, they're pretty much in a very similar position as they were in 2008. They're all leveraged up way too high, and there's a real potential for a meltdown. Well,
I'm not sure J.P. Morgan won't go down in the next month.
We're talking the biggest bank in the country and incredible amounts of cash on hand, $2 trillion in assets under management. If it did go down, that we're all toast. You know, everything's off. That's the way it is. Now, I do agree with you that all of these banks, being as they are too big to fail, they have to or should, you know, split their commercial banking from their investment banking. And
it used to be the rule from 1932 to 1998.
I don't need the history lesson. I know it.
It was the rule. It wasn't a question of splitting them. You couldn't do both.
No, when they changed, Glass-Steagall, they were offering something that they thought would be really good. That you would have one bank, and it would be your investment bank, your commercial bank, your insurance agency. I mean, the whole works. It was going to be one, all in one place. And everybody thought it was a great idea, myself included. But we didn't think it was going to go like this. So, anyhow, so here we are. I mean, we're stuck with essentially, you know, monster banks. Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and J.P. Morgan. And they are incredibly big. I think if any one of them went down, you know, we'd have a crisis. So, and, you know, the deal now is to break up those operations. And I don't know, I mean, it's up to the Federal Reserve Board, I think, might be able to enforce something of that sort. It would probably take separate congressional, in other words, reinstate Glass-Steagall. That's probably what would, you know, be required.
Well, they should do it tomorrow instead of worrying about whether gay men can get married.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing is, though, they're incredibly slow on this stuff. Or why should I? Or let's say laissez-faire. To be honest, nearly everything that happened leading up to 2008, 2009, the SEC could have been doing a hell of a lot. There were enough rules, enough regs, that if they had been enforced, could have prevented a great deal of this. And the Federal Reserve audits, I think, that's one of the big ones. Very clearly, either these banks were falsifying their records or the regulators, you know, weren't doing their jobs. And as for the SEC, we know they were completely incompetent. There's no other word for them.
Wow.
I mean, they, you know, in concert with the Federal Reserve, they allowed all that leverage. And they encouraged it, for Christ's sake.
The whole system is based on this leverage stuff.
Yep.
Everybody borrows everything.
Yeah. These days now, the leverage is way, way below. I think.
Well, that's why the economy is, like, stagnant, essentially.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of course.
Because nobody can borrow any money. And since everybody expands by borrowing rather than by increasing value, instead of borrowing money, they should issue stock. And if you think the company is a good company, you buy their stock.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a...
And then if the company goes under, the people who took the risk go under with them.
Yeah, exactly.
But instead, we don't do that.
Yeah, well, it depends. A company that I have an investment in recently did that. They sold like $15 million worth of stock, and they already had it privately placed, and they did that instead of trying to borrow the money. So now they don't have the debt. However, it has diluted the value of the stock, so... So then that lays it on the shareholders, which
okay,
is
time out,
probably
time
where
out,
it should go.
Time out.
What's
it
that?
Doesn't dilute the value of the stock.
Yes, it dilutes the value of
time
my
out,
stock.
Time out. That's illegal. That's water.
That's
watering.
Not illegal.
You can't water your stock.
Okay, Norm, here's the exact price. I had it at $1.08, and they sold 15 million shares at 95 cents. What happened to my shares? They went down.
But that's the company.
That's what happens. And, you know, there's just the way it is, you know.
That doesn't dilute the value of the stock.
Of course it did. It did it the same freaking day.
Stop.
My stock value went down.
When a company buys stock, I'm talking about what's supposed to happen legally.
This was legal.
When you buy stock, you have to take that cash and turn it into some real value that approaches the book value of the stock. You can't issue stock on assets you don't have.
But don't you see that's what dilution is? The value of the company doesn't, well, here's how it goes. Okay, you have more shares of stock now with essentially the same assets. Now, granted, you just got an injection of $15 million.
And you expand, and that increases your assets.
Well, that's what I hope does happen eventually, but it hasn't happened yet. It's probably another year away. You see, when people do these offerings, especially with the private placement, they have to give the purchaser a little, you know, incentive or a little juice, we'll call it that. So they usually sell it somewhat below the market price. And this is what they did in this case.
Well, but the fact remains that was announced, and you could have clearly unloaded your shares.
No, nobody got a share. I mean, it happened. It was a one-day boom announcement, and there you are, you know.
I didn't think you could do that.
Oh, yeah. As long as the board approves it, boom, there, you know, I mean. But, you know, here's the thing. Now
did they issue the same class of stock?
Oh, yeah, same thing. But see, here's the thing. In many cases, that can be preferential, let's say, to borrowing the money. Now, in this case, this was a gold miner. Now, and they basically...
Oh, I agree 100%.
Yeah. So instead of having $15 million in debt over like 10 years, and you probably would pay a fairly high interest rate, because this is a junior miner, they don't have a lot of assets. So, you know, in the long run, it may be the best thing. I'm hoping so anyway.
Well, I agree 100% that Hey, Dashboard 8406, why don't you come and join us live at 347-945-6713. If you just want to listen, that's pretty cool, too. And if you got anything you want to interject in the conversation, just put it down in the chat room.
I think I'm 8406. The other one is 10248.
That's not you?
No, I think I'm the guy that's sleeping.
Oh, 10248's been here since I came on almost.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'm wrong. But see, I'm not logged in, so that's why.
Okay, well, 84, maybe neither of them's you.
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, but everybody, we have to do something about this spate of borrowing. I mean, that's the contradiction of capitalism. That's why it doesn't work. That's why everything comes crashing down.
Well, debt is okay if it's managed, if it's, not managed, but let's say it's prudent and regulated and not excessive, you know. Of course, it's kind of difficult for the government to be telling people that, but. That's one of our contradictions.
Yeah, but the contradiction of capitalism is if somebody's a winner, somebody else has to be a loser.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Some people say it's vulture capitalism. It's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
what Romney and his buddies used to do. And yes, this is partisan political statements being made here.
Mm.
With that steel company that they destroyed.
Yeah, well, that one, if I'm not mistaken, they put a lot of cash in it. They bought it. They injected it with cash. Then they borrowed money.
Then they made it look attractive and sold it.
Right. Well, no, they borrowed money, and that's more, and then paid that back to the investors, to Bain Capital. So eventually they made money.
Well, I've had students tell me, well, to go into this business out of these Ivy League business schools, their job is to simply look for companies who they believe they can buy the whole company. They only got to buy half plus one share of the company.
Yeah. Well,
that's a key. Because if you own half plus one share, you can then decide to liquidate.
Well, you have all kinds of power at that point.
And if you can determine that you can rip a company apart, I mean, this was these people's job to determine if, after you own the company, if you could take it apart and sell the individual pieces for more than half plus one share, by God, you do it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that is essentially all Carl Icahn does.
It's how Bain Capital does.
Right. Well, sometimes he's right and sometimes he isn't. Now, you know, he managed to, convince the board of Motorola to split the company in two halves. And it worked out really good. I mean, they made a ton of money because it was worth more separately than as a single entity. So now there were other ones.
I'd like to know, because Mitt and his buddies have that counter argument about the steel mill that they took over in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it go.
Yeah, well, it can go either way.
I wondered if USW was still there.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, nobody ever talks about that. I was a USW member, so it's important.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, there are some examples of, I don't think we have a whole lot of steel production anymore. A lot of it is recycling, you know. Certainly new.
Well, it's always a big part of the steel. It's always been a big part of the steel industry. No question about that.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing. I mean, if you consider the amount of crap we purchase and it burns out or gets replaced, obsolete, whatever, you know, you can't just dump it. There's just nowhere to put it anymore. So we do need all of that industry. And it's wrong to just call it recycling because they do a lot more than that, you know.
We do a lot of recycling, though. That is true. And that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I've become like a maniac recycler.
Yeah, Well, the thing now is that I'm more or less forced to do it. I have a big recycling bin and a real tiny garbage bin. So it's not like I can throw away a whole lot of stuff, you know. But, you know, I don't have that much, food tax.
You guys' sales tax is going up, according to the governor.
Oh, we're in desperate shape financially here. Now, if he doesn't get his, even if he gets his tax passed in November, he's still going to have $9 billion $5 or $6 billion left to fill. So he's not fooling anyone. This is not going to solve a damn thing.
Why doesn't J.P. Morgan bet in California?
I don't know. Well, we do have the lowest credit rating of any state in the country.
Is that true?
Yep.
God, I remember when California was like the place.
Yeah, well, we're probably going to, you know, one thing, there's been a population exodus. People with,
okay, so the opposite is now happening in California.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've had, you know, this over the past decade or so, lots of poor people moving in, lots of rich people moving out. So that's where we are.
Where they moved to?
Neighboring states, some Nevada, some Washington. A lot of people went up north, Idaho, Montana, whatever. You know, you sold your house here and bought a bigger place up there and retired. That was pretty much the deal. So.
Yeah.
But Seattle and...
they still have more cows than people in Wyoming?
That's very possible.
I mean, that's amazing. They had a population... Yeah. Well, what's the population of Alaska? About 600,000?
Yeah, there aren't many.
That's pretty. That is just stunning.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and of course it requires a lot of federal support because, you know, let's face it, they
can't afford. I don't think Alaska gets much federal support. They get all the oil money.
Well, they get that, but they also, I believe they're in the top five. In federal aid, yeah, yeah, you know.
But there aren't
federal federal aid per capita. That's
oh, okay.
Per
well,
capita.
That might
yeah.
be. Because there are no people in Ohio, Alaska.
Right, but see, everything is more expensive. You know that because there's no farming.
Well, actually, there is in southern Alaska. But anyway, I want to tell you a little something. I don't know if you'd heard, but it might. You know where Martin Luther King Park is in Buffalo, down near Best Street?
Oh, more or less, yeah.
Well, where the old Offerman Stadium used to be.
Oh, okay.
Right. Porter, Best, you know, that whole area where Martin Luther King Jr. High is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guy walks into Martin Luther King Park and there's 50 or 60 people there having a family birthday party. He takes out a gun and opens fire.
Oh, man.
Left five people laying on the ground.
Oh, geez.
It's unbelievable. Shrek Avenue. Get
oh,
that.
My goodness.
Did you hear what happened on Shrek Avenue?
No, no.
This woman decides that, you know, she's not going to take it anymore. And so she turns in some of the drug dealers.
Hmm.
They burned her house down.
Yeah, I would expect a reaction like that.
But, I mean, it's just, maybe I moved to Alaska. But anyway, and we're coming in the last minute of Norman Knight. Remember, for the next time, it's 347-945-6713. And let's try to get this country focused back on the big issues. Jobs, the cost of education, period. And so maybe we can turn it around. It's time, you know, Karl Marx and his dialectical materialism isn't going to work, and capitalism and its materialism isn't going to work. So maybe it's a time for dialectical digitalism.
Yeah, well, you know, the only thing I can think of is, of course, a third party. And
let's see what happens. But
yeah.
This is it, and we'll see you next week. It's Norm out. Thanks for calling. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Take care, man. Good night.
Bye-bye.